Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When the red, red Robin comes bob, bob, bobbing along, along, there'll be no more sobbing when he starts robbing his home. Sweet song, wake up, you sleepy head, get up, get out of bed, cheer up, the sun is red, live, love, love and be happy. What if I be blue, now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When the red, red Robin comes bob, bob, bobbing along.
One hurt. Welcome to the Charlton Live group therapy session. So good evening to you and welcome to Charlton Live here on Maritime Radio. My name is Louis Mendes, coming at you live here from the Valley. Joining me in the studio as we get ready to look back at yesterday's hugely disappointing defeat here at home to Oxford is Nathan Miller. How you doing now?
Living the dream, mate.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Enjoy it yesterday?
Yeah, stop crying.
Yeah. And joining the pair of us is the grand old man of Charlton Live. Is Terry Smith. How you doing, Tell?
No, I'm rubbish. He's living my dream as well, I reckon, because I'm certainly not.
Yeah. So on tonight's show, we will look back at yesterday's pretty frustrating, if I'm being honest, 3-2 defeat at home to Oxford United. We were winning 2-1 with a minute of normal time left, and we found a way to not win, as is the Charlton way sometimes. And so, yeah, that was particularly disappointing. So we're going to hear the highlights of that game. We're going to hear from Carl Robinson. He came in to speak to Terry exclusively after the game. We also want to hear from you guys. We want to know what you made of yesterday's performances. Who do you blame the defeat on? Do you blame it on the players? Do you blame it on the manager? You know, is it the blame game? Is it just one of those things? Let us know. You can email us, studio@charltonlive.co.uk. You can tweet us at Charlton Live. Head over to Charlton Live forum. There's a thread on there as well. We're also going to hear later on in the show from Rob Harris. He's the chair of the Proud Valiants. Yesterday was the football versus homophobia day here at the Valley. So we'll hear from Rob. And also we have two players in focus tonight because there was two Alex Lonies who made their debuts yesterday. Silly Kai Kai and Michael Gyro both made their debuts in the last sort of 20 minutes yesterday, so I want to know what you made of their performances as well. But tell just before we hear the highlights, what did you make of that?
Well, for a fair chunk of it, look, I think I'll finish that. For a fair chunk of it, I thought we had the game in the bag. But we ought to still point out that they had a couple of really good opportunities, and we looked, I don't know why, and I wish I could put my finger on it, and I'm sure Carl Robinson's feeling the same. We looked fragile at the back. Bear in mind, when Obika was on before he got taken off, he was bothering both Lennon and Konser, I thought, and he had that shot that came off the crossbar, albeit he mishit it, but that's not the point. For some reason, we looked a bit shaky. Now, when Abika went off, I thought, well, you know, they're bringing on the little fella. I'm trying to think of his name. It was
Napa.
And I thought, well, you know, he's quick, but he's not going to bother him quite as much because both Konser, well, no, not Lennon, but Konser's quick, so he should be able to cope. But we still look fragile, and I don't know why particularly. I don't know why that would be, because you know, then we took the lead. They were harrying us, and like most teams do when they come to us at the moment, and putting us under pressure. And so it was always going to take a bit of patience, a little bit of time to break them down, and we did. Akashi scoring the goal, but I thought Josh McGinnis had a good game yesterday, and I thought his part in that shouldn't go unnoticed. Tariq Foster as well, of course, but. Again, when we went 1-0 up, I've got to be honest, I didn't feel 100% confident. You know, normally when you go 1-0 up against a team like that have been doing that to us, a bit like, you know, we've experienced before, as sides that come here, you think, right, we're going to go on from here, or at least we're not going to lose this, we're going to carry on, especially at the moment, the way we've been playing and the players that have come back from injury. But there was something about yesterday that we had this fragility about us that I didn't reckon, I didn't realise, you know, it surprised me. And it didn't surprise me when they equalised at all, and they hit the post as well. They could have got, you know, they could have had a couple in between. So, you know, when McGinnis slid in that goal for the second one, I thought, I wouldn't say get out of jail is probably not the wrong word, because I thought we, you know, over the course of the game we probably deserved it. But I thought, you know, I didn't necessarily see that second one coming. So when it did come, I thought, fantastic, you know, that's it now. We can sew this up. But obviously that never happened.
Yeah, all right, so let's have a listen to what on earth happened there. While we're listening to the highlights, I'm going to try and work out what on earth this beeping noise is. I don't know if any of you guys can hear it here in the studio.
I know what it is.
Yeah, okay.
I'll tell you off air.
So we're going to deal with that. It's probably just the beeping from Terry swearing under his breath when he thinks back at yesterday. So anyway, here are the highlights from yesterday's game.
Rothwell forced backwards by Cash. It's a lovely tackle. Turn. And it's released. Fosu bearing down on a penalty error. Goes past one man, goes past another, shooting opportunity, takes it, parried away by Eastwood in the Oxford goal.
Step over and then release it to Silva behind him. De Silva's got Fosu inside, but he's also got Mavididi back outside. Mavididi taking on Kane, going past him, chip ball into the box, Foster Kaskis there, but header comes in from Marshall. Just wide, well, I say just wide, it was a good yard, 2 yards wide of the right-hand post, but great work in the first place from Mavididi. A good work from Marshall to get into that position.
It's a header from the goal kick, but it's been picked up by Mavat, who tries to release Abika. Brings it down, Abika turns and shoots into the top corner, hits the crossbar, and away by Lennon, with Amos absolutely beaten all ends up. From
Lennon finds McGinnis on the left-hand side, he's made some good runs in the channel for Charlton. McGinnis, good ball into the box, and Fosu, he just needed to tap it in. He's claiming it was a deflection before him. I think it was Martin who missed the ball ahead of him. Kane into the penalty, and Mavididi goes a goal. It's an important block by Martin, and that's the last piece of action here. The first time, only as far as Fosu gets under control. Fosu trying to work a bit of space to his right, finds McGinnis. It's a lovely touch from McGinnis, goes to goal, tip wide by Eastwood.
Good football from Charlton.
Over the head of the Oxford defence, and Fosu will try and close it down, and Mussolini gets himself in a bit of trouble. It comes to McGinnis. McGinnis on the edge of the penalty, a good challenge from Mussolini. Cashy gets there first. Cashy in the penalty area. Cashy!
Oh, yes!
Emma Cashy!
What a finish!
His first goal of the season! Beats Eastwood! Over to his right side, Cashy's running around the valley. Absolutely delighted for him.
McGinnis has stayed down though from the challenge.
And Charlton take the lead here at the valley.
Well, superb work from Tariq Foster and McGinnis in the first place, because the ball forward, Oxford stepped up. McGinnis would have been caught offside, so he deliberately didn't run for the ball, allowed Foster to chase it in. He caused Mussolini all sorts of problems. He was trying to get rid and he couldn't. Trying to wait for the ball to hit the keeper and it wouldn't. So Fosu stepped in, managed to sort of force the mistake from Mussolini to allow McGinnis to take the shot, or at least attempt the shot, and that's why he's down injured. The ball spun through to Cashy, little touch into the box, and a lovely finish to the right-hand side of the
cuts inside. Ball across the box to Henry, who's in space. Henry, and he's got Smith Brown on the outside, takes the shot and scores.
Charlton have had opportunities to punish Oxford, and they haven't, and they've allowed Oxford back in the game. Henry picked the ball up on the edge of the area. Everybody thought, I think he was going to go left to Smith Brown. Instead, took the shot to the right-hand side of Amos, who had no chance to keep it out.
waiting for the restart. Now taken, goes back to Cashy. Cashy looking left for the run of De Silva. He's looking to get beyond Kane, but Kane, well, he played the ball and De Silva's nipped in and taken it off him. Back into the ball!
Yes! Oh, superbly finished by Josh McGuinness. Lovely work from De Silva to rob
Kane
on the right-hand side, the Charlton left outside the penalty area. He nipped into the penalty area along the touchline. Ball back into the six-yard box and finished by McGuinness.
Oh, it's all made by Jay De Silva. It's actually a great pick-out from Cashy just to put Kane under that bit of pressure. But De Silva does excellently to not only win it back, but get into the penalty area. Then the ball across is inch-perfect. And I'm so delighted that McGuinness is on the receiving end. He's worked so hard today, McGuinness. A player out of confidence, a player who's not been in form. But he deserves that goal for Charlton. And they have the perfect response.
Kane's got it into the box. And it's found off the post. Buckley off the Ricketts. Post by Buckley Ricketts. After Lennon had sort of slipped, attempting to get to there first.
On halfway, goes further left out there to Ricardinho. Ball into infield and up to Ruffles. Ruffles into the box and it's going to meet the on-running Kane, who equalises for Oxford.
Once again, it's terrible defending from Charlton. Again, out of nothing. Really out of nothing. They get a bit of space on the left-hand side. It's a good ball in. But it's the right-back who's come all the way forward to tap in. It's an empty net for him. There's no one picking him up. Makes amends for his error earlier. Charlton are going to be so gutted with that. Their own doing, defensively. Not good enough.
Looking for Napa, who's got beyond De Silva. Ball into the box, finds Buckley Ricketts, turns, goes back the other way, sets up the Oxford man, and he scored. And it's Ledson who could have broke Charlton's hearts here.
Oh, I don't believe it. It's the same sort of goal for Charlton to concede. It's down the side. And it was Buckley Ricketts who beats Cashy way too easily, sets up Ledson. Again, there's no one following him at all. No one at all. And Ledson from the edge of the box is a sublime finish from the central midfielder. But Charlton defensively have been woeful today. Three really poor goals to concede. Three similar goals, all from wide positions, ball across. That one was a great finish, yes, but why he was in that much space, how he was able to have that shot, I'll never know.
And that's the last action of the game.
Yeah, didn't sound any better the second time round, really, either, did it? I mean, you know, we get ourselves in that position with 12 minutes left to go, and we think it's going to be 3 points for us, and then that happens. Horrible.
I'm not sure Nathan can talk.
You seem to particularly enjoy it.
Oh dear. Yeah, the thing is, like Telsa, we just seem to every time we seem to come against a big, strong centre back, we don't seem to manage it. You know, like Calvin Andrews or Tom Eves, someone who puts themselves about, we just seem to be just weak. We go 2-1 up, and I don't know. Personally, the game was stretched as it was. I just thought they were just cutting through us every time through the middle. Mm. I thought we should have put, in my opinion, put maybe Brook Jacko on or someone just in that middle just to short it up a bit because I think it was too open. But like tell me, at 2-1, I wouldn't say, you know, I was really, really comfortable, but I couldn't see us losing the game considering how far along it was. This morning, I was still woke up in a foul mood.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it.
I mean, that last 12 minutes after we went ahead, Tell, and with Josh McGuinness's goal, I mean, it was chaotic. It felt like, you know, hit the post. They were exploiting us in wide areas, and I don't know. I mean, Nathan said he felt comfortable a bit. I mean, I didn't particularly feel comfortable in that.
No, and I do agree with Nathan about shoring that midfield up. I think it was. I mean, maybe hindsight's a wonderful thing, but I think I sort of expected him to bring Bauer or Jackson on, if I'm honest. Now, I'm not a huge fan of bringing another centre off, and I think it allows teams to press us and we drop too deep. But on the other hand, it might have. You could have put Bauer at the back and released Konsa just in front of him in the midfield area, or brought Jacko on to maybe shore things up. But on the other hand, a lot of their play came down either flank. They was playing these long balls over the top and behind, And even before they scored and before we scored, they exposed us down both flanks quite a number of times. Mm. I don't. It's a bit strange because De Silva, for example, you don't see that happening normally. But whether it's because Mavadidi's not really a defensive player, you're not going to expect him to come back and track back like Marshall does, for example. So maybe that's an area where we're going to constantly get exposed if teams do it.
Mm. Right, I think I've dealt with the beeping and the news, but if anyone starts hearing some headlines, let me know. But,
it shouldn't come until 8,
yeah,
by the way.
Hopefully, yeah. Right, I mean, I mentioned there at the top of the show asking the listeners, but who do you look to at full-time now? I mean, when we don't see a game, and there has been a few cases over the last few weeks. You know, you mentioned that the Blackpool game, where we let in a late goal, and it's maybe happened a couple of times too often now for it to be a coincidence. So what would you put down this sort of perhaps lack of concentration to?
I mean, I know that there'll be a certain player I think will be pinpointed for a lot of what it was down to. Yeah, I agree, Lennon probably didn't have his greatest game yesterday, but I think when we win games, we do it together. So I think collectively, I think all of us, because our game management yesterday was poor. You're 2-1 up at home, 2 minutes to go. Yeah, we probably cost errors and so forth, but we didn't manage the game, and we've done it so many times where we just can't seem to manage a game or see a game out properly. We invite pressure onto ourselves, we just sit deep. But yeah, I mean, obviously I think Carl alludes to certain positions that didn't do their bit, but yeah, we were just naive and just didn't really manage the game well enough for me, and it's just gutting really, because we had such an opportunity yesterday of picking up a couple of teams won around us, but with a game in hand, it makes that game in hand against Shrewsbury that little bit more important now if you're going to try and stay in the mix. But yeah, I wouldn't say I'd pinpoint it all on one person, but I think the whole team collectively could have done better.
I don't think we defended well as a team from the first minute, to be fair. I think, I don't know why I said it earlier. There seemed to be a collective nervousness across the back four, which I didn't quite get. And I take Nathan's point. I didn't think Harry looked a bit more nervous than the others. Sometimes he was put in some impossible positions, by the way, some really streaky passes back to him. But, yeah, and I wish I could complain. I think you can probably... the whole... notion of winners a team, losers a team is a bit of a naff saying, but I think collectively we didn't defend well. If you consider all three goals came from two from midfield errors and one from their right back, that alludes to the fact that the team didn't defend because nobody tracked back. If you look to the fact that the substitutions didn't help, because immediately after the substitutions we seemed to cave in. So I think everybody needs to take some responsibility for that.
And I guess, will people look at the lack of experience in that in the centre-half position and say, oh, we wish we had, Jason Pearce available, or maybe even Patrick Bauer?
Do you know, I think, and I'm not going to use this analogy too often, so bear with, but if you remember, like, the teams that have... fantastic forward play, teams that have lightning quick on the break, or some really exciting forward players. We have now, we've got some, in Mavadidi and Fosu, Marshall to a lesser extent possibly, but when Aribo's on the pitch, we've got players going forward are frightening or potentially frightening. But does that mean we lose something at the back? Does that mean we lose that ability to shore things up at the back, because these players, as good as they are going forward, aren't necessarily going to be back in the 6-yard box throwing their bodies in front of the ball as they come in. So do we have to now accept the fact that we're going to have to score 3 or 4 to win games?
Well, I'll take it.
Yeah, if it works.
Obviously, the big team news before the game, then you mentioned it, no Joe Aribo on the field. He was replaced by Forster Caskey. Were you surprised by that decision?
Yes, but I sort of convinced myself that the reason it happened was because as Jake Forster Caskey gives us a little bit more defensive cover. Well, that worked.
and of course, Tariq Fosu back in the first time he started. I think he was due to start up at Blackpool last week anyway, before the game got called off. For the first time he has started since his 3.5 months out injured. And I thought he was our most lively-looking player in the opening exchanges. He had that shot that Eastwood did well to palm away, but he was involved in a couple of nice moves. I think in the opening stages, we seem to be on top, certainly more than them. When they hit the bar, that came pretty much against the run of play.
Mm. I thought I liked Fosu in that little number 10 role. I thought we got the ball and he drove him, which was really good. I thought the way that all the front four, even to McGuinness to an extent, he was sort of floating around on the left, they were interchanging really well. But I mean, yeah, I think it was a nice setup, but yeah, Rebo, I thought he was harshly done by, because I think he's been one of the better players in recent weeks. But like, you know, Tel and Cole said, we can understand the reasons why Jake's in there. But yeah, Fos is, you know, he's still coming back. There was one opportunity, which I think Cole says about when he should have squared it, which I nearly broke the chair in front of me, which I think everyone
was anybody
did.
In it?
Yeah, I think he was. So I think he left after that.
Because he never chaired to sit down on anymore.
Yeah. He's an old boy as well. But yeah, no, so yeah, we played well, but it's interesting what Tel said, you know, those front three, the front four rather, even with Zara and Kaikai on the bench, it does leave us quite exposed if they don't do their jobs. Because especially, it's, you know, Cassie and Jake, they're all or nothing, and they ain't going to have too much in the tank after 85 minutes. So, which it was evident yesterday because they sort of run straight through us.
Yeah. So after that opening spell where we saw, like I say, Mavididi had Marshall had a header wide not long after Fosu's shot. And then Abika hit the bar for them. Abika was their most dangerous player in that first half. So when we saw him sort of going off injured coming up towards half time, I thought, oh, hopefully they'll take a bit of the sting out of it. But in terms of our performance in that first half, other than that first 15, 20 minutes or so, we didn't really see too many balls into the box for us, other than that one that Fosu couldn't quite connect with. So other than that, I think the tempo of the game certainly seemed to slow down as we, you know, approached half time.
Yeah, I'd go along with it. I think, again, as I said, we seem to... that teams have come to us and do this a lot, and we've seen it before. The high-pressing game, trying to stop us passing out from defence and negate the skillful players we've got. We're going to have to get used to that. They can't, and teams aren't going to be able to keep that up for 90 minutes. They're just not. And so we just got to be patient. And I thought we were. You know, I didn't think Oxford troubled us that much, other than the fact that, again, for some reason, we looked shaky at the back. You know, the ball's over the top and into the corners. We were scampering back. And normally when teams press us, you know, they cause us a little bit of trouble, but they don't make us look... well, they don't make us panic that much. But for some reason yesterday, I don't know whether it was the weather, the rain, people nervous about the slippery conditions, I don't know, but... for some reason yesterday, we didn't handle it as well as I've seen us do before.
Well, Cole, I spoke to Cole after. He talked a lot about players not doing their jobs in terms of tactically and not trying to be solid after we went 2-1 up, and just almost going a bit too gung-ho perhaps when we were 2-1 up. I mean, did you get the impression that at times we were trying too hard to go forward when we weren't really thinking about our jobs at the back?
Yeah, I think sometimes we tried scoring a perfect goal. I think there were times where we just tried overpassing it. There were times where people weren't doing their jobs, which you could see, because every time they got the ball, you know that they were going to get in behind us. And like Terry said, everyone that comes here, they seem to play the same way. They always do the crossfield balls aiming at our fullbacks because they're not the tallest, so you're going to try and prey on that. But yesterday, I don't know, we just couldn't seem to cope with it, and it was just weird. It was just a nervousness at some stages, but we're just going to have to get used to it, I suppose, because that's how teams are going to play against us.
Start of the second half, you know, we hoping we come out sort of with renewed vigour after half time. And we did see that first chance for McGuinness. I think it was Fosu who had sort of set him up in a shot from the tight angle that was touched around. But again, I think probably until we scored the goal, which was, you know, with what, 25 minutes left, 20 minutes left through Cashy, then that game, it felt like it was petering out into a bit of a nothing game. But, you know, ball fell nicely for Cashy. It was a good finish. Nice to see him score. It was good work from McGuinness and from Fosu to persevere and create that chance for him. And we finally got to see what an Ahmed Cashy goal celebration looks like when he hasn't knocked one in from 50 yards. And sort of slapped the air rather than anyone else, which was nice to see.
I didn't know whether anybody got retribution on him for
well, no, I've got a great photo actually, which Carl Andrews has been taking the photos for us, and he's got a great one in the huddle of Jake Forster-Kaski's hand just about to land on on Cashy's head. I'll have to dig that one out.
I bet he's got a sore head this morning, if that's true.
That one. But I mean, a great finish from Cashy, yeah. And probably the last player you expected to see bursting through and slotting away a chance like that.
We had a couple of efforts, didn't he? Most of them, the corner flag was in more danger than a goal, but he just caught it right, and he was just right place, right time. He obviously could see that, firstly, that Fosu was causing that Messinho, their captain, all sorts of problems. Because, I mean, The other thing that's really annoying is that after we'd scored the first goal, they almost gave us four goals on. They made four complete howlers, one after the other. The goalkeeper twice, a couple of dodgy back pass. They almost tried to gift it to us, and we didn't take advantage of it. And you just thought then that, is that going to come back to haunt us? But as much as I was not 100% confident, I also didn't see them being that big a threat. But it was, they grew in confidence when we didn't take those chances, I think. James Henry came on for them, and we know how good he is. I mean, we tried to sign him, so we know he's a handful. We know he's capable of scoring goals, and that's how it happened. And we left him far too much space in the box.
Do you think Mavadidi going off injured might have had something to do with it as well? Possibly. Similar time, yeah, and then obviously Kai and Gyro both came on. That was sort of mentioned on Twitter before the game, but between those two, Gyro and Kai, they played, I think, one league game in a couple of years. Neither of them have played more than three or four games this year of cup football. And I guess there is always going to be the risk that it's going to take them a little while to get up to speed. So all of a sudden you're bringing on two players who perhaps are lacking a bit of game practice all at once, and that's probably going to take a little bit out of you as well.
Which makes you wonder, why do it?
Yeah.
You know, when you've got Ben Reeves on the bench, you've got Johnny Jackson on the bench, you've got Patrick Bauer on the bench, and you've got Joe Rebo, who've all got game time under their belts. It makes those, you know, if that's true, and if that's an excuse we're looking at, then it makes the substitution a little bit stranger.
Yeah, because I noticed that Tim Jackson's just tweeted in saying that losing Marshall, which was one of the players who went off when those two came on, was what cost us. Once he wasn't tracking back, Solly was left 2-on-1 time and time again. Marshall's value in the last few weeks has been shown so much. I mean,
that 100% agree with that.
Because he is, when we're talking about the attacking players tracking back, the one I was thinking who does is Marshall. He's the best one for it.
And to be fair, Ricky Holmes used to do it as well. When Ricky Holmes was playing, he'd track back as well, because that was obviously instilled in the players.
Done it slightly too much now.
Well, maybe so.
Ended up in Sheffield.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. tracking up, he is now. Mavadidi doesn't do it as much, and when you see him try, it's probably just as well. But this, you know, he's not that type of player. You want him going in the opposite direction, scaring defences and scoring goals. So I haven't got a problem with that. What it may mean is, you know, this formation that we have, where we sort of have this sort of, was it 4-1-3-2-1 or whatever it's got? I can never quite remember.
Yeah, 4-2-3-4.
We've got to, because, you know, if the forward players aren't going to track back, then the midfield's got to be stronger.
And then it was, like I say, James Henry who got the equaliser, former Millwall man, we'd like to add, obviously. Not close down.
You had
to mention that, didn't you? Yeah, I mean, it seems to have an age to pick his spot on the edge of the area.
Well, I think I mentioned it in commentary that it's because everybody thought that Buckley Ricketts, who sort of went on a run, I can't remember if it was to his left or his right now, I've forgotten, but went on a run outside of him and drew the attention of the Charlton defence and midfield away from Henry. They all went with the runner, or seemed to, at least their attention went with the runner, and left Henry acres of space to pick his spot.
But it was only 12 seconds after the restart. I didn't realise it was that quick until I listened back to it this morning. It was only 12 seconds after, and Jay De Silva capitalising on perhaps a mistake at the back and plays it square. And now, you know, the undoubted high point for me yesterday, Josh McGinnis finally getting back on the score sheet. His first goal in 15 appearances. Desperately needed it. And it's funny, actually, because I noticed a lot of people saying, oh, he deserved that goal for his performance. But I tell you what, if he'd not scored yesterday and put in the same performance, people have been saying the same stuff they said over the last few weeks, because he always links up play, he always makes himself busy, he's not scoring goals at the moment. That's why I think as soon as he adds a goal back into it, I think people then become more awake to what he does bring to the team.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think, to be fair to Josh, I don't think he's had the I don't think the service has been outstanding in previous weeks. It's not like he's had it on the plate every week, loads of crosses, and he's missed a couple of one-on-ones. But he did deserve his goal yesterday, but he deserves a goal most weeks because of his, if we're putting it down to work effort. But it was good. It was nice to see him get a goal. Good work from Jay. I don't know what it was right in front of me. I don't know what the right back was doing. But then he had the last laugh anyway, or the second goal.
Yeah.
It was just a delight to see Josh score, and it just everyone just loves him. And he pointed to the crowds. I don't know if his son was there again, because he only seems to score when his kids there.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
That Kane, it was their number 19, their right back, was having a torrid time most of the game, especially when Mavadidi was on. He couldn't cope with him at all, and that sort of stopped him going forward as much. Although in the first half, if you noticed them balls that were being launched down over the top of Jay De Silva, and they were running back in the first sort of 10 or 15, 20 minutes, he was getting forward a lot at that point. And so there was always a threat down that side. He obviously loved getting forward. He was the one that punished us with the second goal. And I think... what we showed with the De Silva goal, McGuinness goal, is that De Silva exposed him horribly as a defender.
So you've gone 2-1 up with 12 minutes left to play, and then how you manage the game for the rest of it. I think, as Carl said in interviews after, you expect to become solid. You know, look for the third for sure, but don't, you know, almost go all out to try and find that third. And the amount of times we seem to get caught out at the back in that final 12 minutes, and we saw, I think it was Napier who hit the post before they came back into it, and then that equalising goal from Kane. I mean, how we had that much space just to turn it home in the middle of our area in the last minute of normal time is anyone's question.
Nobody tracked him back, simple as that. I mean, yeah. At that point it was Kai, wasn't it? It was on that our left-hand side, so it would have been, I guess, down to him or at least another of the midfield players to track him back when he came forward, and we didn't. Simple as that.
And do you think it is a case of with Kai then, lack of game practice, perhaps, or being too...
Lack of knowledgeable of the time, but you've got to admit that it happened before then. Not to the same effect, obviously. So it was done before Kai got on. That situation could have happened once or twice, maybe even three or four times before, where he got into dangerous positions.
It's just basic. It's just basic football knowledge. You track your runners, don't you? That's what you're taught at school. It's like, and then obviously that now, as well as obviously the next one, this cost us. So silly, really. But considering the situation we're in,
I think the difference is no. I think anyway that when you've got forward thinking players and you've got a defender like that Kane who'd come forward and then got caught out at the back, possibly because he'd just bombed forward for the Henry goal, so he's probably still blowing a bit, and that's why De Silva managed to nip in and do it. If you've got teams that can do that and therefore their right back isn't as defensive minded as he should be, we've got to punish him.
Yeah.
And when we don't punish him, and let's think on if Fosso had lifted his head up, we might have scored. And there was at least two others were similar situations where we were in positions where we should have done better and didn't. So if we'd have been two goals clear, then it's less of an issue, and then maybe that guy doesn't make that run because he's too busy concentrating on trying to defend the players that are giving him a hard time. So as it was, they were desperate to get back in the game, so they bombed forward. We didn't track them.
Certainly. And in the commentary, I think you said when that second goal went in, he's broken Cheltenham Hearts. Well, no, chopped him up and into extra pieces there at the end with that goal from Ledson. Again, not exactly closed down. I mean, you'd think you would have learnt your lesson after the first couple.
And what had he done the rest of the game, by the way? Ledson. I mean, he was anonymous. Pretty much anonymous for the whole game.
Best player, and he didn't do anything.
And we had him in our pockets for most of the game, and he is one of their better players.
So I mean, so when that final whistle's gone, you're looking at a defeat, you're looking at disappointment, are you looking at? Do you think that's the result that was deserved throughout the 90 minutes?
No, I still think we shaded it. I still think we were a better side. I actually haven't seen the stats. It might be something I'll look up, but how our stats compared to theirs in terms of possession, in terms of shots and et cetera, et cetera.
Maybe the post and that, I suppose. But yeah, I think I can't sit there and think how they actually troubled us, really. I wouldn't say we got played off the park or... So I think we deserved something. I thought it was robbery, but
a couple of people disagreed. But it's not if you give
them 3 goals. I mean, obviously we lost 3-2. We conceded 3, so obviously we don't deserve to win on goals. But I think our play probably merited a better result, but it wasn't to be. And it's like you say, we've given them 3 goals, so it's all our own fault, really.
Right, so obviously frustrations at the final whistle. Carl Robinson came in to speak to Terry after yesterday's game. This is what he made of that defeat at home to Oxford.
We didn't give our full-backs enough protection when we were winning, and we didn't encourage them to come on to us. Listen, once they score with a few minutes to go, obviously the ascendancy is with the opposition, and we don't want to accept a draw, we want to win. So but still, it was nowhere near good enough the last 6 minutes. Take that 6 minutes away from it. We were by far the best team, isn't
it? And that's the point. I mean, it's like we snatched defeat from the jaws of victory by ourselves almost, because all goals pretty much coming from midfield runners into the box, which also must disappoint.
Yeah, but and none of them were the midfield's fault. It was other people that could have helped them out. They did all their jobs, and then there's one where one midfield player tracks someone all the way. They didn't have to, we can pass him on. There's another one where someone didn't track the runner down the side. But then at 2-1 and at 1-0 today, we had some good chances that we were selfish in that. rather than giving it to somebody else to score. And it would have been, we could have ended up 3-1 up and we could have said game over at 88 minutes. But from that, they broke and all of a sudden, we're on the back foot again.
And is that going to be a learning curve for players?
It's a learning curve for a young team, yeah. It's still finding its way together, coming back to fitness. But there's a lot more to come from them.
And it must be crushing that, you know, from a point where even 2-1 up, being 1-0 up was great, but 2-1 up with Cashy scoring the first one and then Josh McGuinness getting back on the score sheet the second, it must have all seemed like the afternoon was going to be wonderful.
Yes, but at no step, but that's when it comes down to the discipline of the team to keep the shape. And they never, far from it.
And added to that, of course, we had Steffi going off with an injury. How bad is that? It looked like a hamstring.
Yeah, we think it is a hamstring, but we don't know how bad that is yet, so we'll have to wait and see how that materialises. Obviously, we'll see how it settles tomorrow, and then we'll
have the same leg that you did.
I don't know, I can't really recall what leg he did.
I mean, to be fair.
Yeah, so I'll be guessing if I give you an answer on that.
No, fair enough. But again, it's an afternoon that's finished in a way that that didn't look like it was going to start. You know, it started superbly.
We lost it today. It's quite clear. We didn't give our midfield protection or our fullbacks protection, and people didn't do their jobs. It's as simple as that. Today is the clearest reason why we never won. It's so obvious when you see the goals back. So obvious.
And equally frustrating when you look at the results elsewhere that could have really.
Well, actually, I mean, it could be frustrating or equally. Yeah. Well, if you got away with it.
We saw our two new signings, loan signings, coming off the bench.
They look rusty, I think, today. I thought Solé looked a little bit ahead of Michael. But Michael showed glimpses of his power and his pace. But there's a recovery element to that and getting back into shape. We made that substitution because we thought Marshy was off a little bit today. And then also as well, obviously Steffi's one was forced, one was a little bit more tactical. But yeah, it's disappointing.
Again, up to that point with Steffi and Tariq, especially causing Oxford all sorts of problems.
Yeah, but
you must be in here or after the game thinking, how did we lose that really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because on the face of it, and the way we played at times, we should have been out of sight, right?
100%. 100%.
We haven't got a game midweek, which I suppose, is that a benefit? Because obviously you said that the two new guys are rusty. Obviously going to need game time as well as...
Yeah, I think it's game time on anything, yeah. But listen, we'll come back in, we'll work hard this week, and we'll dust ourselves off and go again. We've still got two games in hand on certain teams above us. We're in a relatively good position in relation to where we've been at. We put ourselves right in the mix, but today's a bit of a dent in our confidence and our pride, obviously. There's some big games now coming up that we've got to take full advantage of.
Chip ball, looking for the run of Fosu, who's onside. Fosu, edge of the penalty area. Can he get a shot away? He can, and it's the opening goal. Tariq Fosu sprung the offside trap, gets his second goal of the season, and Charlton's first of the evening, and they're 1-0 up here at the Banksy Stadium.
You're listening to Charlton Live.
So welcome back, it's Charlton Live here on Maritime Radio. Good to hear from Carl Robinson, who came in to speak to Terry exclusively for Charlton Live after yesterday's defeat. You said he wasn't in the mood, really.
He wasn't. I think I did more talking in that interview than he did. maybe not. Yeah, he just didn't. I mean, especially, I think he opened up a little bit more towards the end, but certainly at the beginning, he didn't really seem like he wanted to say much about it.
He came out a lot quicker yesterday than he normally does after a defeat, which I found surprising as well. But yeah, I mean, he talked. I don't know if you mentioned it in that one specifically, but when he talked about the substitutions he made in the BBC interview, and he sort of said maybe he made the wrong ones. Do you think he was sort of, you know, do you think he did make the wrong substitutions yesterday?
Well, Mavididi was forced. I just think bringing two when we know that we're their targets, we knew that they were targeting our fullbacks, and then to bring two new people in the wider positions that are supposed to be protecting the fullbacks, which he admitted they're both rusty, they've hardly played, and they're very attack minded players. I don't see the point. I didn't see the Kai Kai, yes. Zairo, I didn't really understand. I thought at first Joshua was going to go out and offer that bit more of a sort of that work because of his work rate as a protection for Souls. But he put Zairo on there. And but yeah, it's hindsight, you know. I can sit here and say it was the wrong one. Kai Kai had to come on. But yeah, it's. I just find bringing two rusty players on in key positions where we know where they're targeting was quite confusing. But what else could he have done, really?
Mm. Well, don't forget our two players in focus this evening are Sully Kai Kai and Michael Zairo. There's a tweet which I've just retweeted now from the Cheltenham Live account and from my own account. We're asking what you made of those the performances of those two yesterday. So if you go on to Twitter and let us know at Cheltenham Live what you made of the performances of Michael Zairo and of Sully Kai Kai on their debuts. I must tell you this actually before we start taking in the correspondence from yesterday. Now, so at 5 o'clock yesterday when we conceded that third goal, obviously everyone who supports Charlton's fuming. I'm fuming. You guys are fuming. Carl's fuming. My other half, Amy's fuming. Now she's just gone on Facebook and just put no one talk to me, tagging in the value or anything. So everyone knows she's talking about football. And she's got some relatives who live down in, I think, Maidstone actually. I don't think they come to too many games now, but Uncle Bill is still a Charlton fan and still looks out for the results. And so Amy's put on Facebook, I'm fuming. Nobody talked to me. And Amy's aunt has responded to that Facebook thing saying, "Oh, how do you do it? How do they keep doing it?" Bill's just shut himself in the bathroom, and Amy sort of said, "Yeah, I understand." And now Auntie Sheila's responded again today and saying, "Oh, I must tell you this, Amy. Bill spent the rest of the evening walking around grumbling, got up this morning saying, 'Well, at least we had a draw.' Then he opened the paper and saw that a second last-minute goal went in, and then we actually lost. Now I'm going to shut myself
in the
bathroom."
Yeah, I was going to say, I bet the toilet's going to take a hammering.
so he was miserable, thinking we'd drawn 2-0. And didn't find out about the third goal.
Oh, that's painful.
Yeah, that was someone at least I don't know if I'd prefer it like that or not. At least you're going around. At least you've got 12 hours thinking we'd drawn.
I'd rather spend a week thinking we'd drawn rather than a day.
Well, shame we didn't go to the bathroom with 12 minutes left to play, really, celebrating the 3 points. All right, let's have a look at the tweets that started coming in this afternoon. The first one came from Ev James. Said, "Evening, chaps. Carl Robinson states that we were in control each time we took the lead. If that was the case, then we were all seeing a different game. Oxford shut us down all afternoon. They were in control. Also, they knew how to kill a game off. We need to learn from this and quickly. Too many times this season we have had the inability to kill a game off. However, once the experience returns to the defence and now Josh has his goal, we will do the business. We have such a youthful, skillful ball playing team. It's always great to have this, but knowing how to mix it up will see us over the line. At this rate, we will just crawl over it." And you've used that. I've mentioned it a few times now. I just wonder if the inexperience of the back line might not have helped at times, but you know, the inexperience of how we seem to be the lack of common sense of just trying to of getting caught out over and over again at the back when we were winning, then when we were drawing as well. It was so naive at that defending at times.
And I think that's fair. But I mean, who do you blame that? You know, who do you target that?
I blame that on you, Tel.
Yeah, okay, cheers. having Piercy at the back is obviously going to be better because he's by far our best defender. Maybe Patrick Bauer alongside Piercy is the best back two, central two we have. I don't know. I like Konza playing. I think he's calm and he likes to play football. And I like having the sort of mix. I think Piercy and Konza are a great mix. However, there are times when, and players like Piercy and potentially Bauer know this, times when Rosed is a much better option. Maybe not doing that enough brings the fragility to the rest of the back or rest of the side, because when they scored their second, we sort of allowed Oxford then to just steamroller us for the final goal. And maybe when you've got more experienced heads out there, that if they can't kick the ball, they kick the player. To make sure they don't do that.
And on that exact point, Richard Justin's just tweeted in, "Why have JJ on the bench if we don't bring him on to close down games like that?" Because I feel like we have seen him a couple of times this season
where he's done that.
I think even the Walsall game at home possibly he came on in that game, or maybe it was the Oldham game at home where he does come on and he can add that experience head and that a bit of communication and stuff that we need. So maybe that would have been a wise decision yesterday.
Oh yeah, 100%, because I think We said at the beginning of the year we knew JJ wasn't going to be playing every week, but there'll be games where we'll need to see a game out, or we might be chasing a goal after a set piece or something. And I think that would have been Because I know he brought a Rebo on, but that was like 10 minutes after the second goal or something, wasn't it? Or after our second goal. But as much as a Rebo's good, I still think he should have brought a bit of steel on because we were too open.
I think he brought Johnny Jackson on both for the Gillingham, for the Oldham game and the Bury game when we were 1-0 up. So,
I don't know why he didn't. So, I don't know if Jacko, well, he wouldn't be carrying injury because he wouldn't be on the bench, but... I don't know, but obviously only maybe he wanted to give Ariba a go because recent form, I don't know, but yeah, we just like we said earlier, the game management was poor, you know, we didn't keep the ball, we didn't, you know, like you wanted someone like Pearcey, just no nonsense, just get rid of it, you know, just not faffing about at the back, but yeah. I don't know how long it is until Pearcey's back, because I think Pearcey and Konza are our best two. I think Bale's okay, but I think Pearcey is just by far our best defender.
Yeah. Dan Dempsey says, we leave a big Josh on for 90 minutes when in the last 10 he struggles to run back. Second goal was a hoof to him offside. Then they counter and score. Wingers didn't support fullbacks at 2-2 either. See, the amount of times when the ball goes into the box, even late on there, and I thought McGuinness was back there defending. So did you feel he was not getting back to help? Or?
Well, I think it's possible. I don't think it's impossible, but... And it's going to sound like I'm, you know, saying Josh can do no wrong, which is clearly not the case. But when you've got a centre forward who's basically up there pretty much on his own for most of the game and has to run into the channels and has to chase lost causes, you know, to then track back is asking a lot. He's there at set pieces, of course. And, if their centre-half scores... Or one of the two centre half scores that runs past him and puts the ball in the net, then I'd accept the criticism of him. But when it's a right back or two midfield players who are burying the ball in the back of the net, then I'm not sure that's Josh McGuinness's fault.
Teddy Boy says, Big Josh played well, got the goal his performance deserved. Disagree with Robbo regarding Jake Forster-Kaski. Thought he started well but deteriorated as the game went on. In contrast, Ledson became more and more influential. Ultimately, we struggle to kill a game off. We don't score enough when we're on top and regularly look likely to concede. Yesterday, we got punished. Because, in interviews yesterday, Carl said that he felt that Kaski and Forster-Kaski were our two best players. Did you agree with that? Did you disagree? Because Teddy Boy
didn't
disagree with that.
I don't know. I didn't think they were poor. I thought they both had quite a lot of energy in there. I thought they'd done okay. Cashy got forward a lot more than I have ever seen him. Hence why he probably had a nosebleed after he scored. But I thought they'd done okay. Saying who was our best players, I mean, apart from Josh, I would have said them two. I don't think... But... Going back to the point about wasting chances, exactly what Tell said. There was a period where goalie kicked it out twice, like Tell said. There was a little dodgy head back pass, and we nearly capitalised on that. It's just moments like that where we always seem to not finish, and then we're always sitting here on a Sunday saying, "Oh well, if we put our chances away, we'd be in the top two, I think." But we just don't. As simple as that.
Yeah, Stephen Reader tweets, how about talking about how inept Robinson is as a manager? His tactics, the formation he sticks with, they're not good enough. Everyone knows how we're going to play. It's boring, negative football. To get out of Division 3, you have to play 4-4-2 and put teams under pressure. I mean, it's well known that we stick to the 4-2-3-1. I disagree that it's negative, boring football, because I think... you can argue it. Sometimes it's too gung ho. Like at times yesterday, when with the amount of attacking players that we do have. But I mean, to say we're predictable. A lot of people have said that, and we do tend to stick to the same formation. Do you think there is a danger that we could get found out?
I think we are being found out. Generally, I mean, teams come here with a game plan that we either can or can't deal with. I think you've got to give Oxford some credit in as much as that. Normally, when teams like Bury Oldham came here with that same game plan, but as soon as we scored, they didn't then have the either ability or the nous to come back at us, whereas Oxford did. And Oxford didn't change that game plan, they carried on with the same one. And they clearly sensed that we were fragile and then went for it. And so you have to give them some credit, because normally speaking, when you go 1-0 up after a team's battle to try and keep us keep it to a clean sheet and try and nullify us, then there's the danger that they could capitulate, which they didn't, clearly. About the formation, I understand what people are saying. I think we are too rigid from time. I think there should be times when you change it up a bit. It did look like we were playing 4-4-2 when Jaro came on. It looked that way. Whether that was deliberate or not, I'm not sure.
Riscardo says game management was the problem. The blame lies with the management team. And then Fry Fury says, yesterday was a last straw for me in supporting Robinson. I've lost complete confidence in his ability as a manager. Apart from that, I was very happy for Super Josh. Won every ball in the air, worked so hard in his endeavour to get on the end of De Silva's cross. Was amazing. So, I mean, so on there, Fry Fury is saying that he's lost complete confidence in Carl Robinson. After yesterday's result, I mean, obviously this comes on the back of a little bit of a winning streak, and you know, transfer window that probably gone slightly better than most people expected. But you know, I mean, we saw that before we had these three or four wins in a row when we were on that bit of a winless run. There was quite a lot of fans sort of questioning Carl Robinson, and that seemed to quiet down after the three wins. But obviously, a lot of people are going to look at you know, a couple of goals in the last couple of minutes. I mean, Carl was as annoyed as everyone else at full time yesterday. I mean, can you? You see why people are questioning him, perhaps, can you? Or, do you think it's too soon, or you know, is it come on the back of that run we were on just before the last couple of games?
I mean, listen, everyone's entitled to their view. I don't agree with it, but I think, yeah, we had that bad patch over Christmas where we had a lot of injuries and our form wasn't great. We've won a couple since then, and it sort of mellowed a little bit. And then as soon as we lost the game, I anticipated it coming back again because... Yeah, I mean, on paper, our squad should be a lot higher up in the league, in my opinion, but we're not. But yeah, I can understand people's frustrations, but I wouldn't say it's, in my opinion, I wouldn't say it's, I've had enough of Robbo.
Yeah, I mean, if you look, like, say, you mentioned the injury crisis over the Christmas period, which I think it would have hurt any team. And there were some performances within that Christmas period that, despite the injury crisis, weren't good enough, obviously. You will get those throughout the season. But now as we're sort of coming out the other end of it, there's only a couple now who are still waiting for fitness. Obviously, we're not going to see Billy Clark, but the likes of Piercy and Bauer, who are sort of coming back now. You know, so once the squad gets together, and now after this, like we say, transfer window that hasn't gone as badly as we'd hoped, or as we feared, sorry. Now is the time that Carl has to prove himself for the rest of the season now, because whatever happens between now and the end of the season is where is what he's going to be measured on fully. Because like I say, he might have got a little bit of leeway because of the injury crisis over Christmas, and now he's got what's set out in front of him for the rest of the season. You know, I mean, this is one game. This is a blip. This is a disappointing result that if it finished 5 minutes earlier, we would have won. And we'd be going on about great four wins in a row.
I think he's got a bit of leeway because we achieved those three results on the back of losing Ricky Holmes and on the back of what's been going on around the ground, around outside the football playing side of the club. Everybody thought we were going to lose players, including Carl. So. I think that's the reason that people backed off a little bit on Carl, because he managed to get three really good results on in around some utter chaos, and I think the reason then it's gone completely the other way is because we came into yesterday and Blackpool, obviously the game before Blackpool that was called off, we came into those games with a renewed confidence that we'd survived the transfer window without losing anybody else. We'd brought in two fairly exciting players. We had Fosu back. We had Mavididi on fire. So everybody's thinking, well, this is it. You know, we've now got players who are on fire and can rip teams apart. We've got people coming back from injury now playing. We've got two new signings who are supposed to be fantastic. We are now on a roll. And so losing after everybody thinking that this is the new dawn is bound to kick people in the guts. Absolutely bound to kick. And so you're going to get a reaction. And that's football. There's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah. Right, Matt Brown says, yesterday we struggled to finish some of our chances. Felt that Lennon has taken a lot of stick, but Konsa didn't really impress me. We need to improve in a few areas, such as taking chances and helping get back when defending. I mean, Fred sort of mentioned about, you know, what Carl said about players not tracking back, and said that it was the players who've become complacent. I mean, you know, that seems to be what Carl was saying in the interview. Yesterday, Jimmy Seed said, when De Silva has been bombarded in the past, Carl Robinson has brought on Saar to help out on the left. That has worked pretty well. De Silva is a tidy left back but can struggle under an aerial assault. And obviously, we didn't have Saar available. We did have Bauer on the bench yesterday, so that could have been an option if you wanted to try like that. But there's been a couple of times where Carl sought to protect De Silva from long balls and stuff. I mean,
yeah, well, I don't think it was the aerial threat. Actually, I mean, I agree that it was down that side we seemed to be getting caught out, but I don't think it was an aerial threat necessarily. It was just that they were overloading down that side constantly that the threat came. So maybe Carl just didn't think there was much point. I actually agree with that to a point whereby, you know, we're talking maybe bringing Jacko on, because we were clearly getting overrun down that side, and De Silva needed help, no question about it, and he didn't get it.
Yeah. Now, Richard Burton responding to... Carl's quote where he said in one of the quotes in the interview, which I tweeted, was it was nowhere near good enough in the last 6 minutes, but take away those 6 minutes and we were by far the better team. And Richard Burton said, I agree with Carl, if we hadn't lost the match we might have won. Which is fair. Right, London Innit Geezer says, so tell me again why Robinson is so great, as I don't get it. As for signing the Palace wonder kid on loan to give him experience to benefit them, disgusted, completely disgusted. Wouldn't happen if I was in charge, hell would freeze over first. I mean, obviously it doesn't, obviously, yeah, I mean, I was chatting to
that's nailed to the mast, yeah, right there.
I was chatting to Mads in the Crossbars after the game yesterday. Many of you will know Mads. If you don't know him, look up Charlton fan ran Iceland England game, and then you'll know who Mads is. But I was chatting to him after the game yesterday in Crossbars, and he pointed out quite nicely. We're talking about the two new loan signings, and he said Mikel Ziro obviously on loan from Wolves, and Kai Khan loan from Palace. He said, you know how it is. So Ziro's coming in and said, oh, excited to see this player, I've heard good things about him. Now when the kid from Palace comes on loan, he goes, right, go on then, prove yourself, because it's a little bit more you've got to do in it. And
well, I think a part of, yeah, I mean, I think where especially Charlton fans are going to come from on that is that we've offloaded Carlin, who's one of our own, to Crawley and scores by the way, when most people were thinking he's getting back to sort of level that we saw when he first burst onto the scene. And we bring in a kid. Now, the fact that he's from Palace doesn't help by a long stretch. So that, you know, Kaikai's got a serious amount of pressure, I suppose, to perform, because he's got to do the job. He's got to be better than Carlin by far, and he's got to really improve us. Otherwise, and that, you know, it's because of where he's from, he's going to get some stick.
Mm. He also had championship clubs after him as well, didn't he? So
by all accounts, he's a good player.
So he's got pressure, exactly.
I mean, like I say, the pair of them, those two have barely played this season, yeah. So you probably can't, not fair to judge them on the first 20 minutes. But we are, though, because there are players in focus at the end of the show. So don't forget to take
in that respect. You've got to go back to then. That is Carl's responsibility, because if they've played that few games, should they have come on? Should they have been put under that microscope and under that pressure, yeah, if they haven't got that game time in them?
Especially at the same time. Sebo says, I blame it mainly on just being one of those freaky things that can only happen once in a while.
It only happens to Charlton.
Yeah, it probably happened for a very long time. Let's hope that doesn't destroy the lads' psychological confidence. See, I was trying to think the last time we conceded twice. I mean, there'd definitely be times in between these two examples. But I remember I went up to Anfield. My first ever trip to Anfield would have been in about 2003, and Sean Bartlett put us 1-0 up just after half time, and on 86 minutes we were winning 1-0 and ended up losing 2-1 with Steven Gerrard scoring the winner. I remember, I think I was close to tears coming out of that as a, I was probably about 16 at the time. It was pathetic. But yeah, I was pretty upset coming out of that at the time. Colin Hart,
I was considerably older and I was upset.
Colin Hart says, Lennon looked out of his depth. We were too deep trying to defend the game out. My honest view, felt that Oxford looked a bit more drilled than we were. It's interesting, obviously, Oxford were managerless at the moment as well. Because often, you often see teams who are all fighting together with no manager, sometimes that they can pick something out. But in terms of, do you feel they were more organised? I think us struggling to break them down at times in that first half would certainly add to that, when they broke us down so easy at the end of the game.
I think any team you play, no matter what level, if they sense a weakness, if any team senses that you've got a weakness, if they sense you're not quite on it, and they can exploit that, then they will. Because, you know, no, there are no mug teams. You know, there are teams you should beat, of course. But generally speaking, there are no real mug teams in League One, especially when you're, you know, in the same similar position. So, you know, they spotted our frailty and went for it. And actually, you know, turned us over. And I wouldn't say deservedly so, but, you know, the last 5 minutes, we couldn't cope.
Yeah. London Innit Geezer, adding to his comments about Sully Kaikai from Palace, says, I don't care if he's a reincarnation of Stanley Matthews, he won't get any support.
Noted.
From me. Colin Hart says, lads, the first half we got overrun on our left-hand side. Jay seemed to have an extra man on him numerous times. So again, perhaps a case of people not tracking back. Seb Lewis says, it's one of those that knocks you sideways for a couple of days, like Blackburn Carling Cup in 2005 was probably when I last felt like this. I remember we lost, we were 2-0 up, ended up losing 3-2. I think I was ill that night and didn't go to the game. I remember going to bed and we were 2-0 up, a bit like Uncle Bill in the story there, actually. We were 2-0 up when I went to bed, and I woke up and we lost 3-2.
So both results basically are Uncle Bill's and yours fault.
Yeah, clearly. Yeah. Well, I did it the other way around once. I used to work shifts at Sainsbury's on a Tuesday night shift. And that would start at 10 o'clock. So I remember I was sat up in, we were playing Blackburn here at the Valley in our relegation season, and I was sat up there with teletext on the TV watching it, and it still said 0-0. I got a text from a friend of mine who's not even a Charlton fan, said, "Oh, your game's 0-0 so I thought, "Oh, I must have finished." So I went down and started my shift. Came up about 1 o'clock in the morning. I thought I'd read the match report on teletext, and I saw that, I think El Karkouri scored like a 92nd minute free kick. So it does work the other way sometimes. And also, I never realised Scott Parker had scored the winner at Leeds that time until I watched the highlights. Oh, wow. I thought he'd finished 1-1. So I went absolutely mental when I watched those highlights. Right, Valley Floyd Fred says that we are significantly underperforming. We have the second best attack in the league in terms of playing 4-2-3-1, which basically means you have four potential goal scorers on paper. With these new signings, we should be competing for the top two, not wavering for sixth. But injuries granted, we cannot control has let us down. But my God, the defence this year has been awful. Robinson and Slade are polar opposites. We've had two shocks to the system in two seasons. Other than that, other than Rotherham away, that was decent. But funny enough, actually, I mean, I enjoyed the defensive performance at Rotherham away, but the more you think about it, I mean, they missed two or three gilt-edged chances.
Not as much as Wigan away.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. See,
Wigan away was outstanding.
And we have done it at times.
Absolutely.
Yeah. The same, but it's not consistently enough. And a good point there from Freddie about, I think under Slade at the start of the season, I think we were conceding quite a few, not very many goals. And it's been two very big changes in playing style. Yeah, but
we never went over the halfway line either.
Yeah, but I mean, in fairness, that's long enough ago for it. It shouldn't really be an issue now. But there we go. Reece says another game where we conceded two goals in the last minute was Wigan 2-1 in 2014. Yeah, Sordell put us 1-0 up early, and then Tram letting two easily savable shots in stoppage time. Yeah, I remember that, and got absolutely soaked. On the way back to the station as well. Not a good day. Right, let's have a quick break here on Charlton Life. We've still got plenty of emails to read about as well. We're still going to hear from Rob Harris from the Proud Valiants as well, but we're going to have a quick break here. We'll be back in 30 seconds.
Throw from Holmes into Solly. Solly cross.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Oh, Foster's on the far side, gets something on it.
Yes!
And it's there! Finished off by Foster Caskey! And Charlton have the lead!
Welcome back, it's Charlton Live here on Maritime Radio. Don't forget, also coming up later on in the show, we've got our two players in focus, Sully Kaikai and Mikhail Gyro. Want to know what you made of both of their debuts yesterday. The first one's just come in, but it's pretty much all swearing, so I'm not going to use that one. But I would like it if you guys find that tweet on our timeline. Let us know what you made of their debuts, what you hope that they will achieve during their time at the club. But let's just have a quick break about talking specifically about yesterday's game. Also here at the Valley yesterday, it was designated as Football versus Homophobia Day. There's a Football versus Homophobia campaign which is running throughout the game in England, and Charlton yesterday dedicated the game to part of that campaign. Now I spoke to Rob Harris, who is the chair of the Charlton Athletic Proud Valiants, which is the LGBT supporters group here at the Valley. Rob's a great guy. He organised the Football versus Homophobia tournament, which me and Nathan and Tom played in last year. As I think we were on the Proud Valiants team, actually, weren't we?
Yes.
So he organised that and gets involved with a lot of stuff like this. And so obviously with yesterday's game designated as the Football versus Homophobia game, I caught up with Rob to ask him why events like this are important, why he feels like things like this are the right thing to do.
I mean, these kind of events are really, really important. Homophobia in football is actually still a big issue. You know, fans up and down the country and their clubs should be actually doing events like this. You know, it's important that as a football supporter you can go to your stadium and feel safe, that you don't feel threatened, that you know, someone shouting out some kind of remark that they think is inoffensive, it's probably not to certain supporters. And you know, they need to feel safe, they need to feel like their club supports them, and there is a duty of care of every club up and down the country to make sure all fans feel safe.
I guess it is a case of, you know, you'll probably get fans out there who haven't walked a mile in your shoes to say, oh, I don't hear anything like that. But you probably, if you're not listening out for it and you're not expecting it, then you probably won't even notice it, and how people's words can affect other people who are sitting next to them just enjoying the game as well.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it is about education and what words are appropriate. I mean, Kick It Out and Racism was a big movement, which thankfully managed to actually, I wouldn't say get rid of racism in football, but it's definitely a lot better than when I started to go as a kid. I mean, it is that kind of thing that, you know, if you're not tuned into homophobia and what homophobic language can, how it can affect you. I mean, I can remember as a kid when I was about 16, 17, going to a football match, and the guy next to me made a remark of, "Get up, you poof," when a player fell down. Now, to him, that probably seemed inoffensive. To someone that at that age was struggling with their sexuality, that really became a big threat to me. And for the rest of the match, I wasn't able to concentrate because I was wondering what people were sitting around me, what their attitude they were to me. And, you know, today, although in some ways it's easier to come out as a LGBT teen, it's also a lot more complex. And, you know, I know people, you know, that don't go to football because they feel that it's such a male-orientated atmosphere there that they can't be themselves, that they can't relax, that they can't enjoy the match. I mean, clubs like Charlton are doing some amazing work. You know, we have this tournament, this match day, we have a tournament in the spring, Charlton versus homophobia, and we're having a conference here. You know, the importance of clubs like this, supporters group like this, and clubs like Charlton, the work they do, you know, cannot be underestimated for it, what it does for everybody. You know, we have fans that have written to us that are just happy that there is such an organisation within Charlton where they can actually, you know, feel that they have a reason to be here, that it's not just, you know, they're a football supporter, but they're recognised as a member of the LGBT community.
And you mentioned, obviously, you are the chair of the Proud Valiants. You mentioned the tournament that we had the last summer, and I guess it's coming up again this summer. I mean, how important is it for you that, you know, all sorts of fans come and join up with a group and, you know, give their support to the group?
Yeah, I mean, this is going to be the third Charlton versus homophobia tournament this year. It's getting bigger and bigger. It was very interesting last year that we had some 10-year-old kids come that I think they only came because it was football, it was free, and it was a really good event, you know. And so they came in and they spoke to a lot of the members of the Proud Valiants. And, you know, these are the kind of people that probably don't necessarily associate much with LGBT people. But by the end of the day, they were sort of really actually taking a lot home. And there was also families here that, you know, I spoke to in the lounge and didn't know what the event was really about, but they were there with their young kids and everything, and they're people that we probably wouldn't necessarily get to speak to. You know, they may, you know, they came along to the event, and it just, the more people that know more about the LGBT community, the better. And, you know, you get a lot of negative press about the LGBT community, but, you know, this is a great way to actually show some of the good that the, you know, the community does give, and also the stuff that football can give back to us.
And finally, of course, the club lent their name to the Bexley Invicta team that's now become the Charlton Invicta team, an LGBT friendly team. I mean, how nice is it that there's a, you know, a team where anyone knows that they can come and play and enjoy their football?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the football teams like that have been around for a very, very long time. I used to play for one 15 years ago called the Left Footers. But it is great that Charlton, the Trust, and Charlton Invicta are now all working together. It's great that there's, you know, an organisation where people can come, a footballing group, that people can come and play football, not feel threatened. And that's also not, you know, the great thing about these kind of groups, it's for the LGBT community and allies. So, you know, you don't have to be, you know, gay or lesbian or anything like that to play in the group. But, you know, they are really, really, it's another step to actually making people aware of, you know, that if they are a member of the gay community, they're not alone. If they want to play football, there are groups they can go and play football with.
Silver steps in, wins it back for Charlton, comes away on a run and then feeds Fosu over halfway. Fosu on the left hand side, they're heading towards the penalty area, looking to take on Pond, gets in the box, is he going to fall over? No, he's got it, Douglas! There's number three!
So welcome back, this is Charlton Live here on Maritime Radio. It's great to hear there from Rob Harris, the chair of the Charlton Proud Valiance, the LGBT supporters group here at the Valley. Yesterday was the club's football versus homophobia day dedicated. I hope you enjoyed his day. And you know, stuff like this, it just all steps in the right direction in terms of raising awareness. And you know, you hear from Rob there, and he's possibly saying things that, you know, sometimes you'll be in a football stadium and you'll say something and you think you're just having a go at a player, and you don't think what those words mean to people around you and how they affect other Charlton fans who've come to watch the game with you. And that's why it's important to raise awareness of this sort of stuff.
Oh, absolutely, no question about it. But I mean, I do find myself thinking that, you know, back in the day when I was coming and venting my spleen as a young 14, 12, 18, whatever.
Had football been invented by then?
Yeah, it was the old, yeah, black and white. Wasn't
yeah.
It? But I just wonder, you know, you think back then and you think, you know, did I say? You start questioning whether you did say any of that stuff,
and that's why
it's not impossible. Yeah. By the way,
that's why education is important. Yeah, it's something you just wouldn't have even thought of. Yeah. You just think you're shouting at a player, and you don't think about it. And that's why it could create a more uncomfortable place for LGBT supporters to watch a game of football. And that's why days like what happened here at the Valley yesterday are important. The Proud Valiance is a really interesting group, and you know, it's sort of like a somewhere for LGBT people. If they want to go to the game but they think, oh, am I going to get called this, or am I going to hear this or that language, they go, actually, I'm going to meet like-minded people. They'll raise awareness, and then other people who might not be part of the group or be interested in joining the group will actually think, well, actually, no, I have used that language. I don't want to use that language. I don't want to upset the fellow Charlton supporters. And also the Bexley, the Charlton Invicta team. Now, you went and what you train with them often, Nath. You went and see him play today as well. Yep. It's similar. I mean, anyone can play. They let you in.
It's just
a case, you know, it's like a, you know, they know they can enjoy their football, and you went down to watch them today and they smashed someone 6-0.
Yeah, they're top of the league, so you know they will.
Why is it only the first team that are rubbish? Like the women's team are great, the Invicta
last 16
team
of the FA Cup.
Yeah, the upbeats are brilliant. The youth teams aren't bad. It's just the first team.
Yeah, no, they're doing really well. They've got a good bunch of lads down there, really good footballers down there, and yeah, no, they're playing really well. Everyone's really inclusive. All abilities down there, like you said, including himself. but yeah, no, it's good, and this it's a great little cause down there. And they always get a few people down there at Sparrows Lane on a match day. So yeah, all good.
Right, well, let's make ourselves miserable again and continue looking back at yesterday's game. Paul Ellis,
what did you do?
Paul Ellis emails in. Hi, Louis and Co. I've put this on the post-match views thread. So at risk of repeating myself, here it goes. A few thoughts, not just about yesterday's game, but some equally applicable to most recent matches. Big Josh had a good game yesterday, my man of the match. He worked his watts off, did some great work in advanced positions down the flanks, and finally got a well-deserved goal. He also showed a good touch in the box, wrong foot in a defender before his drive was well saved by the keeper. Should he be played as our sole striker? If so, he needs some decent service and support from midfield. Probably the best cross into the box yesterday came from Josh himself. When the team reviews the video of the match, I hope he stands up and says, hey midfield, did you see that? That's the sort of cross I want. Why do our players have to take so many touches before shooting? Sometimes the chance disappears completely because they take too long. A couple of times yesterday, a first time strike was needed but not taken, so he passed back, and before you know it, it's with Cons and Lennon and Amos. In a similar vein, the likes of Fozzie, Steffi and Marshall need to learn that you normally only have to beat a defender once in a move. You shouldn't have to beat him a second or third time. If you're doing that, then either your teammates are letting you down by not supporting the attack, or you're keeping your head down and not looking up what's around you. We don't need to be trying to score spectacular individual goals all the time across into the box, followed by a tap-in from 3 or 4 foot out counts as exactly the same as a Maisie 40-yard run. Our midfield is too slow individually. We've got some speedsters, but when we counter-attack, we're far too slow as a team getting forward, so that by the time the cavalry has arrived, not only is defence wagons being circled, they've had time to build a wall as well. And the midfield doesn't seem to be helping the defence either. We may have looked a little iffy in the centre of defence lately, but haven't had too much protection in front of them. Others have already brought up Robbo's substitutions and games management with a few minutes ago. Paddy or Jacko should have helped to see the game out to hold on for the win. It's interesting actually on the last one, because I mean a lot of people have said that and probably agree with it, but funnily enough, when Powell used to bring on Dorian DeVete and we go on to concede at the same time, it's like, oh, we shouldn't have done that.
Yeah, I said it before, I'm not a huge fan of bringing on a centre half to shore up a game. I think another midfield or defensive midfield is much better, because when you bring on a centre half, you just naturally drop deep. And there's too many people in the box, and it causes chaos, and you end up more harm than good.
They'll just shove another one of their centre halves up there as well.
I agree with if you're going to put Bauer on, for example, then you take a striker off, then you put Conser in midfield. You don't make five across the back. You still keep the four, or bring Dzeko on. I think we've said before, I don't quite understand why it didn't happen.
Yeah, for Albert Rossi said just 4-2-1 to us with a minute left. We should have bought on the centre half to see the game out. Sorry to say, Sunday morning. Defending. Right, the next email is from Mark Newbury. Says, what a kick in the Watsits. Evening, chaps. First, my commiserations for trying to get some positives from yesterday. Well, you got a couple.
We needed comfort food today, didn't
we? Yeah, so we should have invited him in again to cook. I've just been sat at home eating all day today. It's been brilliant. I'm interested in the manager's comments about the game, as personally, I think it's a 50-50 split on blame for that result. Carl has to look at himself for his team selection. Aribo all day over Jake Forster-Kaski at the moment, and previous games where we've been winning, he brings on a defender, and then he's surprised that the attacking players he brings on don't defend. Even if he didn't put Bauer on, just tell Josh to drop in at the back. Fair play to Oxford as they kept going, but I'd say all their goals were preventable, especially the second where the guy goes straight round Solly. I think it's a little early to form opinions about the new guys, but we have to drop Lennon and give Conza some more mature help alongside him. It's pity, as he'd been looking forward all week to the game. I think we all had as well.
If Bowers had a good week's training, I'd be amazed if he's not in the back four.
I mean, say it again, lack of experience at the back. And I mean, only brings a bit more than perhaps Lennon.
Because I like Errol, and I think he's potentially going to be a very good player. But I think yesterday he looked nervous. I think something that Harry does do that I think will go once he gets more experience is that with Konza alongside him, when you've got Bauer alongside Konza or Pierce alongside Konza, Ezri Konza does the footballing bit, does them amazing tackles, and then brings the ball out of defence and all that sort of stuff. Bauer and Piercy just get rid, or proper defending, if you like. Whereas with Harry, he tends to try and emulate what Ezri can do, that's when it falls over. But I have to reiterate, I don't think there were too many occasions where the goals. I'm trying to think of the goals back. I can't remember them any of them being the centre half's fault. Henry's maybe for not closing him down, but then he's still a midfield player in the box that should have somebody coming back and tracking.
Right, next email comes in from .. This is someone from New Zealand. I can't actually see the name, which is a bit weird, but the email says
new owners?
Yeah, maybe.
Just checking.
Yeah. There we go. Sam does say it right. No. Right. It says, hi crew, my thoughts on the game as a fan. Game control in any sport is key for success. But Charlton doing a typical Charlton 2-1 up and then going 3-2 down is amazing with all these new players and positivity around the club of keeping players. It can hit you hard where it really hurts. I know it's a bad result, but my main fear is that a playoff position is needed. If not, Robinson will be sacked, in my opinion. He said he hopes he can get over to see the Reds soon. I mean, yeah, interesting. I mean, obviously, with the talking about if we don't get in the playoffs, will Robinson be sacked? I mean, with any takeover coming in, that would certainly give that a chance. And as I said sort of earlier on now, you know, it's in his hands now. He's got his squad. He knows what he's got for the rest of the season. It's up to him now to get us into the playoffs. So, yes, there was a blip. We're still in a very good position. We're certainly, I think we're only a couple of points outside the playoffs, games in hand. We're still in a very good position. But at the same time, we're all so down after yesterday. I wonder if that is dragging everyone's mentality further down than we need to be because of the position we're in.
Almost certainly true. But it's still going to be an interesting watch whether, hopefully we're getting new owners in sooner rather than later, what their take on the situation is going to be, whether they give the existing management team, because not just Carl, is it? It's a team. Where they give them time to try and get into the top six and get in the playoffs, or they make an immediate change. Mm. I think immediate change wouldn't result in us doing any better. I suspect not, but who knows? You know, yeah. It's going to be a really, it's, you know, as much as I think Cole deserves a chance personally, but with new owners coming in, who knows?
I know I said on Thursday, I think that it's in our hands still. I mean, we've got. Bradford and Shrewsbury at home coming up, and then obviously Rotherham, Blackburn and Scunthorpe home in April. So I still think it's in our hands to throw away, which we did yesterday.
Good practice.
yeah, it's great practice. But I think we will. I think we'll be okay. But if we throw it away, we can only blame ourselves with those games at home. So hopefully not.
Hopefully not. Bob Knight says, guys, I can't agree with Robinson. Who is to blame? We have brought in talented young players. We are lacking experience both in the side and in management, and they don't know how to close out a game. Robinson raved during the week about how the players were amazing him with their tricks. To suddenly expect the same players to be tackling back and covering the fullbacks is just an excuse for his own naivety. I mean, Carl was talking about the Harlem Grove Trotters at one point during his pre-match press conference. And we have got a lot of skills and stuff going forward. He says that we need Pierce to lead the back four and Jackson coming on near the end in this situation to organise the kids and stop the opposition's rhythm. Whenever we play an experienced team, they bully our back four and two holding midfielders invite them on. If we are an attacking side, then we need to keep pressurising, not sitting back. Robinson's lack of tactical awareness is the problem. Now, I mean, Carl talked about when Jairo came in, about how he was hoping, how he was excited now, because this has given more options to change things tactically when he wants to. And you said yesterday you felt that it was more of a 4-4-2 when he came on. I mean,
whether that was deliberate or not, I don't know.
I mean, but in terms of, like, you know, so Carl's sort of effectively admitting there that perhaps sometimes he has been quite rigid with his tactics, and now is the time for him to, you know, be able maybe to change games more because he's got different types of players on the bench.
Maybe that's the point. Maybe he's saying is that the formation he plays is all he thinks we can play with the players we had. Mm. I'm not entirely sure that's true, but
at the same time last season we were trying to play it and we didn't have the right players.
But I do agree with the point. We have been beaten up at times and bullied, and I think that was the case yesterday.
Marcus says, hi guys, I can't see us going up this season unless Pierce and Bauer are fit. Conza and Lennon are good but inexperienced. What do you think our back four should be, provided everyone is fit? So, I mean, for me, if everyone's fit, my one would definitely be Pierce will be in there. I think Konza will go with him over Bauer. I mean, obviously Konza can play in the defensive midfield as well. But I feel obviously then left back De Silva. The only other option really you've got is Page, and I don't think I've ever seen him play for more than 5 minutes. And then at right back, who are the options? You've got Dick Steele. You've got obviously Solly. I think Solly gets ahead of Dick Steele at the moment. So for me, it would be Solly, Pierce, Konza, and De Silva. That's my back four. For you,
same.
Exactly the same. I think
the only discussion would be that depending on, you see, I think again it might depend on who we're playing. If we're up against a side that got two huge centre forwards, then maybe is an option to play Bauer alongside Pierce. If we've got I agree with Dick Steele at right back. I think I'd rather have Konza at right back rather than Dick, because Anthony is not a right back.
He's done very well indeed.
But that's not his position. You know, at some point or other, I'd like him to be playing where he's supposed to be playing, which is sort of centralish, right centre midfield.
Yeah, I think that what you said about if we come up against two bullish centre forwards, you'd have Bauer and Pearce, and obviously if you're playing against the one, you'll have Piercy taken over, and then that's when you'll have Konsa with the space to go and do his runs or whatever. But
if you looked at Abika yesterday, he managed to, whoever he was up against, he managed to beat up.
Well, that's what I mean, and that's what I think we missed. It's just that old school rock.
You know, Jason Pearce would have said, "Here I am," at some point in the first 10 minutes to John Abika.
Yeah.
There's no way you would have been able to roll Jason Pearce more than once.
Yeah. Okay, right, let's have a final break here on Charlton Live. Don't forget, after this break is your last chance to get your comments in on our two players in focus this week, Mikhail Gyro and Sully Kaikai. We'll be back here on Charlton Live in 30 seconds.
Taking his man on, Clark, does really well as well to do so.
Gets to the corner.
Now he's on to take on Buchanan, keeping the ball. Lovely ball into Konsa to the touchline. Konsa, reverse ball, back to Forster, Kaske!
Yeah,
and there's the third! And it's game over and 3 points for Charlton.
So welcome back. We're into the last 5 minutes or so of this evening's Charlton Live. I just got a good tweet from Mark Anderson, actually, saying the only good thing to come out of yesterday was Josh breaking his Baron spell. But then he's attached a photo of himself that I think was taken by Paul Edwards, one of the South London press photographers, who just happened to catch Mark Anderson celebrating one of the goals, and he's really lucky. It's a great photo. So well done for that, Mark. Matthias says, Josh McGuinness didn't seem to celebrate much, considering he's a man who hadn't scored in ages. I think this showed he wanted to leave in January, but credit to him for continuing to play. I mean, are you reading that much into the body language? You see, I seem to. I've got a couple of good photos.
Utter relief, I suspect.
Yeah,
and probably the timing of the goal meant he was probably cream cracking as well. So he's not going to run anywhere.
Yeah, excellent stuff. Right, so like I said, our two players in focus yesterday are two of the three loan signings we made in January. Obviously, we've got Mavadidi in early doors, so we talked about him a fair bit already. Now, obviously, yes, in the week leading up to the Blackpool game, we signed Sully Kaikai and Mikhail Gyro. Gyro's joined us on loan from Wolverhampton Wanderers. He's really not played much football since he came to this country. He started off with 3 goals in a couple of games for Wolves, but then suffered a really nasty injury. It was at the start of last season. Start of this season, he played a couple of cup games. But obviously, it's a Wolves side that's flying and is seems to be a bit surplus to requirements there at the moment. And Sully Kaikai, with Palace in the Premier League, he doesn't really get that many chances to play in the first team in the Premier League. I think he's played one Premier League game for Palace this season. But other than that, he's been on loan at the likes of Brentford and Shrewsbury Town, where he's got an absolute hatful of goals. So, you know, on paper, these are two players that we're quite excited to see now. Yesterday, they both came on with about 20-25 minutes to go, and neither, you know, none of them scored a hat-trick, put it that way, and neither of them set the world alight yesterday. I mean, it may be way too early to be judging them, but at the same time, we can now talk about what we hope they can bring to the team that's different to what we've already got.
Yeah, they were rusty, like Cole said. I think that was very obvious. I think Kaikai's first touch bounced off and went out for a throw, but I think he grew into the game. Gyro looked very rusty, but like you said, he had a bad injury. But the difficulty is now is that they need games to get fit. But we've not got a lot of time. We've got coming to the crunch part of the season now, where we need to get them fitly as quickly as possible. So I don't know how far off they are. I think Robbo said Kaikai is a bit more further ahead than Gyro is, but
and he looked it yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, I think we were just discussing about Gyro. He looked a bit.
It looked like he was running in treacle.
Yeah, he did a little bit.
But that's always going to be the case, like we say, when they haven't played for so long. But I mean, in terms of a different option. I mean, Kaikai, I don't know, without knowing too much, I imagine it'd be reasonably similar to what we've got in terms of attacking wingers. We've got a fair few.
He looked like he had something about him yesterday, apart from the first couple of touches, which were awful. Once he settled in a little bit to the game, he looked like he could offer something. He looked physically strong and looked quick.
Yeah, but in terms of something different to what we have, he's probably more of the same. But again, sometimes we've got one player who's played 70 minutes and tired, then you want to bring a different one on who can bring on fresh legs. And but you know, an eye for goal apparently was what we saw at Shrewsbury Town, so that's what we can hope for. Now Mikhail Gyro, again, we're told he's probably going to be something a bit different to what Josh McGuinness is, but he's a big striker, but apparently he's a bit more pacey, and hopefully he'll be able to score a few more goals than what Josh has done over the last few months.
Well, fingers crossed on that. As Nath said, though, you know, how quickly they can get up to speed is going to be important. So there'll be some intense training, I suspect, over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, I mean, because in terms of if you look at when the window closed, Tal, with you know, the only real significant outgoing in terms of Ricky Holmes in permanent. Obviously, we've lost Cag, which I was slightly disappointed about personally.
I am as well, actually.
Because I thought, but I mean, do you think overall our squad's been improved, made worse, the same?
No, I think it's improved. I mean, we have got to see how Kaikai and Gyro get on. But more importantly for me was, and I think I mentioned it a few times yesterday, more importantly, who we didn't get rid of, you know, the fact that we didn't lose anybody, any more bodies, because I was fully expecting for a few to go out the door. But that didn't happen, and we've added, we've used the wages of Ricky Holmes on players coming in. When you consider, actually, it's three players on Ricky Holmes' wages. He must have been paid far too much. on the face of it, our squad is stronger as a result.
Right, the only comments we've really had about those two players that we're trying to be in focus on was from Dean Martin. He says they were poor and they cost us the game due to neither of them caring about defending. I've cleaned that up quite significantly for broadcast. Right, we're coming up to the end of the show. Just a reminder, actually, that on February the 26th, there is going to be a quiz night down at the Bexley Heath Marriott in aid of Prostate Cancer UK. A lot of us are cycling over to Amsterdam in the summer as part of Prostate Cancer UK's London to Amsterdam. It's football clubs from all over the country, either going from Yorkshire or from London to Amsterdam and doing a cycle. So we're all raising money for that. This quiz night, like I said, is going to be on Monday the 26th down at the Bexley Heath Marriott. It's £10 per person. Obviously, all that money will go, every single penny of that will go to the charity, because the hotel are providing the room for free. Down there, there's going to be Carl Robinson, there's going to be Johnny Jackson, Lee Bowyer from the current set. There's going to be loads of former players. Scott Minto, former player, and of course Sky Sports host, is going to be hosting the evening. You know, I'm sure Bob Boulder will be there, Cole Leeburn will be there, there'll be other ones to look out for as well. So get yourselves booked up onto a table. Even Mads is thinking of doing it. Mads, who I mentioned earlier of the Iceland rant, although he mentioned to me yesterday, and I'm not joking, that if he does do it, he's going to have to miss his ballroom dancing class on the Monday evening.
Ooh,
now if you know Mads, you're as shocked as I am that that's what's going on. But if he's going to miss his ballroom dancing class, then you guys have got no excuse not to go. You'll be playing against Charlton Live as well. We've got a table there, so make sure you get your tickets for that from the Charlton website. All the money will go to a very good cause. Right, we've run out of time here on this evening's Charlton Live. It's a group therapy session. I'm glad we've got through it together. Nathan, thank you for coming in.
No, I see you Thursday.
Yeah, we'll be back on Thursday. Terry, you won't be here on Thursday.
No, I won't. Yeah,
but you'll be up at Doncaster.
I'll be at Doncaster.
Something to look forward to. So Charlton's next game is up at Doncaster, and we'll preview that here on Maritime Radio next Thursday. But this has been Charlton Live. I've been Louis Meadows. Thanks for all your tweets and emails and whatnot throughout the show. Hope you've enjoyed it. And we'll be back here on Thursday evening.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.